Welcome to Canucks Central at Noon. Vancouver Canucks live here.
Drops off for Horvat, back to Edler, then to Horvat at the slot. He scores! Oh, Horvat in overtime!
On the home of hockey, Sportsnet 650.
Landeskog turned it over to Horvat, right to the slot. Pettersson scores! Is there anything this kid can't do?
Here's Mick Nizar.
Welcome to Canucks Central at Noon. Satyar Shah with Jamie Dodd, the Friday edition. We're going to have head coach Travis Green join us in moments, and there's another scrimmage coming up tonight, and we are less than a week away, Jamie, to watching a preseason game that is not a scrimmage when the Canucks take on the Winnipeg Jets in Edmonton within the NHL bubble. So we're getting closer and closer to decisions getting made on the roster.
Yeah, it's wild. All indications are this could be the last scrimmage before that the Canucks play before they go into Edmonton and play that game against the Winnipeg Jets. So it's crunch time now, and I'm really excited to speak with Travis Green and get his thoughts on what's happened in camp so far. But yeah, like you said, Sad, I mean, some decisions are going to have to happen pretty quick here.
Yeah, and we just got some of the things we kind of talked about when I was on with you on Canucks Central on Tuesday was maybe that roster will be a bit expanded for that preseason game against the Winnipeg Jets, and that is what Chris Johnson from Sportsnet has just reported. The teams will be allowed to have 13 forwards and 7 defensemen dress for that game. So when we're trying to figure out who's going to, you know, make this Canucks roster for game one against the Minnesota Wild, well, you know, that battle will still be ongoing in that game because the team's going to be able to have two forwards essentially fighting for the one single spot on that team.
And it's interesting because even with that extra spot, you know, you still kind of have a potential battle to be that extra forward in that exhibition game. You know, you're looking at a guy like Michael Ferland. Can he get into the exhibition game and have that last chance to prove that he should play against the Minnesota Wild? You know, obviously all eyes will be on Zach McEwen and Jake Virtanen and their performance in that. I feel bad for them in a way because their performance in that one exhibition game in totally bizarre situation will be so heavily scrutinized, and you know, it could play a really big role into whether they make it into the Wild. But yeah, I mean, the Canucks have so many forwards. There will even be guys just fighting to be that 13th forward in the exhibition game.
Well, and that's going to be the big thing. So to see who actually gets one of those two spots. If all things stay equal and everybody stays healthy, we all are assuming at this point that Sutter, Beagle, and Mott will be the fourth line. So we're essentially talking about the 12th and the 13th forward position, which is a right wing on the Gaudet line, because we are assuming, of course, Roussel and Gaudet will both be playing. Nobody's touching the top six. So for those two spots, we're talking about Virtanen, McEwen, Erickson, and Ferland. The question is going to be which two of those four players are going to get a chance to perform in that game against the Winnipeg Jets. And head coach Travis Green is going to join us after he concludes his Zoom call with the media just off Rogers Arena. So we're going to get him on the show as soon as he has done that. But today also, Jamie, is Game of Takes. And I haven't had the pleasure to be part of Canucks Central for Game of Takes. This is Bick Nizar's creation. I know you've worked with him on this, Brandon Batchelor as well over the summer. And I got to say, I've really enjoyed this battle of takes between fans.
Yeah, it's been great. I'm really excited for our topic today because it's been a lot of fun throughout the week as well. So let's get to it. Let's do Game of Takes today.
When you play the Game of Takes,
winter is coming.
You either win.
The lion doesn't concern himself with the opinions of the sheep.
Or, well, you know.
Dracarys.
Rally the realm and make your claim to the composite throne. Here's Bick.
I drink, and I know things.
Valar Morghulis.
And it was a very special edition of Game of Takes this week, Sat, because we decided, you know, instead of just the binary yes or no, good or bad option, we opened it up a little bit. We said, we just want to hear your best, most creative trash talk, your best chirps directed at the Minnesota Wild. We chose the perfect week because the Wild chose this week to announce that they're going to have the world's lamest dress code for this qualifying round against the Canucks. So plenty of ammunition to go up against the Minnesota Wild. And the defending champion is Sean Butler. But first, let's start with the challenger. I'm really excited for this one. the challenger this week is none other than the Alien Pope on Twitter. So let's hear what he had to say about the Minnesota Wild.
Minnesota, a town where the North Stars played for 26 years and only went to the final once and didn't win. You would think Minnesota would have learned their lesson, but no, they are back as of 2000 and at it for 20 years and with the same results. One appearance, zero wins. I guess it's only six more years till you fold. Now, the big thing is you've missed the window. Your team average age is 27.5 years old, and the Stanley Cup winning team average age is 27.2. So you're just a little too late. Blame it on the coronavirus. That's what everyone else is doing. But 27 is not too old to change a career. I Googled it. My one worry is the advantage Minnesota will have playing in an empty arena. I mean, they're already used to playing in an empty arena. So regardless of your past or your really old players, the one major difference is the majestic DQPD. So put that suntan lotion on the back of your necks, because the holy red light will not stop shining.
All right, there he is, the Alien Pope, bringing some harsh words for the Minnesota Wild. And yeah, of course, the Alien Pope is, I guess, a follower or the head of the Church of Pedersen. So had to get the Deaky Pete shout out in there. And in his estimation, it's going to be Elias Pettersson who really lays the smackdown on the Minnesota Wild in this series.
And a very authoritative voice as well. It did kind of sound like, you know, somebody was speaking to us on grand speakers or something. So, yeah. A good take from the Alien Pope.
And I really enjoyed that. And I also wanted to say, you know, he had the throwaway line there. You know, 27 is not too old to consider a career change. And I can attest to that. I was 29 when I changed my career. So there you go. Not too old yet for the Minnesota Wild to consider a career change. All right. That was Alien Pope, the challenger to the composite throne this week. Our defending champion is Sean Butler. Let's have a listen at his entry into Game of Takes this week.
Hey, Wild fans. Knock, knock.
Who's there?
Minnesota Wild.
Minnesota Wild who?
Exactly.
Oh.
Hey, Minnesota. I hear you call yourselves the state of hockey. I guess when your options are the Twins, the Timberwolves, the Vikings, and literally anything else about Minnesota, you gotta go with the least bad option. Still, that's a bit like Manitoba calling itself the province of sashimi. Yeah, technically you can get it there if you really want to hate yourself afterward, but why? Welcome to McDonald's, home of public toilets. Hey, Minnesota, I hear that in 20 years you're best known for a 2003 Cinderella run where you defeated the Avalanche and the Canucks before being swept by the Ducks. Cinderella run? Cinderella is the story of an emotionally abused teenager with no agency that's uplifted from her circumstances by a combination of magic, good fortune, and a thirsty prince. That's what you're celebrating here? I'm told Minnesota fans will say that 2003 was a very long time ago and that they play an exciting physical style now. These are not your parents' Wild. Which I suppose is true. Your parents' Wild were called the Minnesota North Stars. I mean, cold weather and caring about hockey are like your only two things. And you lost a hockey franchise. To Dallas. Hey Wild, credit where credit's due. Good job hiring Jed Brackett. He's a smart scout. You've been rebuilding since about 2000, which I guess just makes it building. Clearly Judd understands job security. Finally, to Canucks fans, I hope we can put aside our petty grievances in a couple of days and finally rally together on this. I know it's not the opponent you were hoping for. I know this doesn't recapture that magic of those classic series, like 2011, when Burroughs eliminated Chicago and we all as one yelled, "Woo!" Still, let's all raise our voices in a couple of weeks. When Pettersson eliminates the Minnesota Wild, we can all say,
"Who?"
There it is, Sean Butler, currently sitting on the composite throne as the reigning Game of Takes champion. And I got to say, Sad, he is making a strong bid to repeat. That was some savage stuff directed at the Minnesota Wild, getting creative there as well. I thoroughly enjoyed that from Sean Butler.
Well, I mean, dropping the hammer on the Minnesota Wild. For once now, Canucks Nation is unified and going after a common enemy instead of going after each other on social media. So that is a, you know, that's positive. I'll say that this one thing, because you know me, I'm all about fairness, right?
Yeah.
Minnesota's only missed the playoffs once in 7 years. So I'm just saying, it hasn't been a complete, you know, S show in that organization. But still, I like the fire that Sean brought in that. You know, like, you know, go after, like, it's fine for you to go after the other team and have fun with facts a little bit.
It was great. And I also like that he included, a plea for Canucks fans to set aside their differences and focus on the common enemy of the Minnesota Wild. And yeah, I mean, that got me fired up listening to that, to be honest, because, you know, when we talked about Game of Takes earlier in the week, my position was, man, the Minnesota Wild are the most boring team in NHL history. It's hard to even get that excited about beating them because they're so vanilla. And Sean might convince me otherwise. I'm getting a little pumped up now.
You want payback from the West Coast Express era? Is that what you want? You know,
exactly.
Smart over that loss when the Canucks were up 3-1.
I mean, that was a bad loss. There's no way around it. That
game
was tough.
Seven was horrible too. They had a lead in the. I mean, okay, listen, we're gonna be revisiting history here. So I do like that Sean is hearkening back to some of those hard feelings and just going after the Minnesota Wild. That's good. A common enemy. It takes time away from the internal enemies on Canucks Nation.
Yeah, and we could use a little less infighting here in Canucks Nation, probably. So that's good. It's good. It's Canucks Central here. Jamie Dodd and Satyar Shah. We're going to be joined momentarily by Canucks head coach Travis Green. Really looking forward to that. And, you know, Sat, we were talking about the competition for those final, you know, in the exhibition game, the final two forward roster spots. And in the game one against Minnesota, it'll be really that one final roster spot, assuming everyone is healthy. Right now, who do you see as having the edge to gain those last spots on the roster?
I mean, it's increasingly looking like it's a three-horse race for one spot and a three-horse race for the two final spots. Like, we'll talk to Travis. He's not going to reveal anything. I'm still skeptical that a guy like Zach MacEwen will end up playing in game one, you know, especially over Vertanen and say Ferland and say Erickson. I'm just hesitant to go there despite how good he looked. Just, you know, coaches often default to going with guys that do have some of that experience, right? So as much as I want to say Zach's in that convo, I think for the Jets game, it's four players for two spots, but essentially three players for two spots. Ferland, Erickson, and Vertanen. Which two of those three gets the 12th and 13th spot against the Jets? Now, obviously, a lot can also change based on the scrimmage this evening as well at Rogers Arena.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see how those three players perform in this scrimmage. And it's so funny to me that, you know, so much is weighing in the balance in these scrimmages, because in a normal training camp, you know, the first inter-squad scrimmage it's a bit of a laugh, right? And we always say on the radio, you know, don't read into this, don't pay any attention to it. But in this situation, it's so important just to position yourself to in that lineup crunch. And you know, Sat, the name that really surprises me that to be in the running this late is Michael Ferland. And I don't say that because of anything against him as a player when he's healthy, but just remember when the season was paused, where we thought we were with Michael Ferland and his health, it seemed like he was a long, long way from getting back on the ice and contributing to the Canucks. And more than anything, I'm just impressed for him, you know, as a person, as an individual player, that he's been able to get to this point and really threaten to make the roster.
Because we talked about the first week of training camp, right? A lot of talk about MacEwen. He's really asserting himself and he has leapfrogged the other guys. So if we're doing the training camp power rankings, which is fair because this is what we have to cover in the scrimmages, there's only one preseason game. It's fair to kind of read between the lines in these things. But if we're going on the strict power ranking, that scrimmage the other night, Ferland was the best player out of those guys vying for his spot. Erickson played well. He scored a goal. And Jake Virtanen played well and scored a goal too. Zach was a guy that didn't quite bring the same level as those other guys that Justin Bailey had a good game, for instance, right? Like in that scrimmage. So I am surprised that Ferland was good enough in that game, that scrimmage, that he's made people think. Because I've been kind of hesitant about whether he gets into game one. I thought he'd kind of would be an option perhaps, but he'll be an option, say, in game two or three, maybe down the road a little bit. But if he plays well again tonight in the scrimmage and he gets into that game against the Jets and looks good and not out of place, he's a guy who's been there. He has a skill set. He knows how to play defensively. He knows how to get in on the forecheck. The effort is there. And despite him not fighting anymore, there is something to his game of value with his speed as well and his shot that if he shows he can keep up and if he doesn't look out of place against the Jets, he has a realistic chance of playing against the Wild.
Yeah, like you said, I've been in very much a kind of I'll believe it when I see it mode. And we're getting to that point where you kind of have to believe it because he's progressed noticeably since the beginning of camp from when he was still kind of shaking off the rust to, you know, really not looking out of place in what have been pretty, or, you know, fairly intense scrimmages, all things considered, you know, given all the other situation surrounding this training camp. It's actually been impressive that they've been able to simulate an NHL feel to these games as much as they have. Sats John, Jamie Dodd here with you on Sportsnet 650. Canucks Central, Canucks head coach Travis Green will join us shortly. He's just doing his Zoom call with the media right now. And I also want to talk to you, Sat, about, you know, a couple of guys who aren't going to figure in the lineup decisions against the Wild, but might have done enough to kind of change the perception of them heading into next year's training camp. And that's Cole Lind and Olli Juolevi. Do you think either of those guys can use this experience in this training camp as a springboard to challenge for a spot in the lineup going into next season?
Oh, for sure. That's the proper takeaway for those guys, right? Like, I think for Cole Lind and also for Olli Juolevi, it's not so much about them getting into the lineup this postseason. It could be that they're positioning themselves to be part of the attack, you know, the Black Aces that go to Edmonton potentially, right? But more than anything, they're showing that there's intrigue in seeing what they do next year. For Juolevi, the skating, which is something he's had to improve because of all the injuries, that is something that looked a lot better. And Cole Lind, the progression continues. And the fact that he hasn't looked out of place and he has gotten better as training camps gone on and as scrimmages have gone on shows that he is adaptable. So I'm intrigued to see what he does in next training camp, whenever that ends up being.
Yeah, I think that's the key for Cole Lind, is just that he's kind of picked up his game as he's seen what the level is here. And it's such a valuable opportunity for these guys to play against legit, you know, star caliber NHL players, even in a simulated environment. I think that experience is invaluable for them, and hopefully it does, you know, lead to good things down the road for them. We're going to take a quick break here. We'll have Travis Green on the other side. It's Jamie Dodd and Satyar Shah, Sportsnet 650. It's Canucks Central on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Yeah, I think we're pretty confident just with the skating he's been doing that he'll be fine. I wouldn't say we were relieved. I think we expected him to be fine, to be honest.
Now more of Canucks Central on the official home of the Vancouver Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Welcome back to Canucks Central at Noon. Satyar Shah with Jamie Dodd. That is Canucks head coach Travis Green, who just met with the media on a Zoom call. He's going to join us here momentarily on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650, to talk about how training camp has gone and paring down the roster ahead of the trip to Edmonton to play hockey in a hub city, a preseason game, the only one coming up on Wednesday, July 29th, Canucks and Jets. But before that happens, there's a scrimmage tonight, Jamie, and this one could be very telling, because as much as this scrimmage isn't going to determine who's going to be on the roster for game one against the Minnesota Wild, this could be the final shot here for some of these guys to get themselves into that preseason game against the Jets.
And it's been impressive so far. I think that the intensity level has really picked up in each scrimmage that we've seen. And, you know, you expect that to continue tonight. You can tell guys are getting back into the flow of things, getting back into the rhythm. And, you know, if that's the case, then that makes this one even more meaningful, because it's the closest, you know, the higher the intensity, the more you want to see from guys, right? So I think this one should be really, really interesting. And it's the kind of thing that could, you know, the margins are so thin between all of the four players that we're talking about, and really especially the top three that we're talking about for that final spot in the lineup. You know, a standout performance one way or the other in this scrimmage could be what makes the difference.
Yeah, and Travis was asked about Michael Ferland during a Zoom call, and he said all along that Ferland was an option to play against the Minnesota Wild, and he also mentioned that he's seen a glimmer in Ferland's eye. So we'll kind of talk about Ferland when Travis Green, Canucks head coach, joins us here in a few moments on Sportsnet 650, Canucks Central at noon. Jamie Dodd, I am Satyar Shah. Bick Nizar off this week. He'll be back again next week. And a reminder, Canucks game day broadcasts are coming again on Wednesday when I will have the pregame show leading into puck drop at 7:30. Brendan Batchelor and Corey Hirsch with the calls as well. And we'll be doing a postgame show full flight next Wednesday right here on Sportsnet 650. And we mentioned the Chris Johnson report from Sportsnet that the preseason game against the Jets, teams will be allowed to dress 13 forwards and 7 defensemen. And this topic is obviously a lot, you know, less important because we're not looking at the defense as having any jobs up for grabs. So is a 7th defenseman thing going to, you know, who's that going to be will be interesting because Jordy Benn, of course, we know has been dealing with a family matter as well. So it may not end up being him for that game against the Jets, but is that of interest at all? Who ends up being the 7th defenseman?
You know, I think it's probably more interesting from a future perspective than it is against the Minnesota Wild. Because, you know, first of all, let's say that Jordy Benn is available for that game. Even if Travis Green sits him out, you know, I wouldn't read that as saying somebody's leaped over Jordy Benn for that 7th spot. That's just maybe more right. Using it as an addition for another player. And yeah, from that standpoint, I think it'll be most telling, you know, if it is Brogan Rafferty, if it is Olia Lebby, it will be interesting just to read that as a vote of confidence in those players going forward rather than, oh, this guy could feature against Minnesota. I don't think it'll be that. I think it'll just be the coaching staff wanting to get a longer look at somebody who could be a big part of a team down the road.
Well, and the question really will come down to who the eighth, you know, who's going to end up being the 8th defenseman, because we know Jordy Benn, you know, he's not with the team now. And with everything going on and the testing and quarantine and all that, like, I'm just not sure Jordy Benn's going to be able to be back with the team and get cleared and also be part of that preseason game against the Winnipeg Jets. So it really comes down to the defenseman you kind of mentioned. I don't anticipate it will be Olia Lebby. I think it's going to be somebody who actually has a chance of playing if something happens or somebody gets hurt in that game and Jordy Benn's not back in time and all that sort of stuff. So to me, it's essentially down to 3 guys for that one spot. And I don't include Rafferty there yet. It's Guillaume Brisebois, Ashton Sautner, and Jalen Chatfield. And Chatfield's been, you know, impressive through camp. I know the team's been happy with him. So I think it's those 3 guys vying for that one spot. And as much as your Levy's been a positive story, I just don't see him getting that nod because that game's a dress rehearsal. You want to give whoever might get a chance to play against the Wild a warm-up game at the very least in case you have to call on that player. And,
yeah,
you know, I just don't see your Levy being that guy yet.
Yeah, it would be a big vote of confidence if they gave it to you, Levy. Let's put it that way. You're right. They've shown much more willingness to, you know, sub a guy like Jalen Chatfield or Guillaume Brisebois in that kind of emergency situation. And, you know, to your point, yeah, dress rehearsal is the right word for it. They're going to want to have as close to their night one lineup as possible against the Winnipeg Jets, just to make sure everyone has a chance to get comfortable with each other.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. So it's interesting to see what happens. And, you know, the Ferland stuff is what I want to get into with Travis, because as he mentioned in the Zoom call, he's been impressed by what he's seen from Michael Ferland. And he mentioned he's always been an option against the Minnesota Wild. But I think that option is becoming more and more realistic based on how he's been skating better as camp goes on. And we mentioned that scrimmage, and not to overrate a scrimmage in training camp, but for a guy who's missed as much time as he has, who's had the post-concussion syndromes and issues and hasn't been able to play a full game in, you know, going on, you know, 8 months now, right? We're talking about a long period of time since he's played a full hockey game. It's just hard to assume he's going to be ready to go. And we can read into that a bit. And the fact that he's been able to throw a few hits and he hasn't had to be absent from practice or absent from the next scrimmage after doing that is very positive. And unlike some of those younger guys, he has a track record in the playoffs. And whether you or I think that's important or not, oftentimes, Jamie, coaches will default to guys that have the experience as long as they look like they can hold up in camp.
For sure. And I think the other thing with Michael Ferland is, you know, this team went out and invested in him just this past summer, just a year ago, right? So they're going to want to get a return on that investment. They obviously brought him in for a reason. They brought him in, you know, in large part to play in a situation like this. And, you know, I think if they think he's up to speed right now, yeah, of course they're going to want to use the guy that they went out and made a priority to bring in, and his playoff experience is part of that. That's part of why they went out and got him.
And the other thing with Ferland, he's not going to be dropping the gloves the same way he has in the past, and maybe he won't be throwing as many vicious hits as he has in the past because of him trying to make sure he doesn't suffer another concussion. But it doesn't mean he's not very aggressive on the forecheck. It doesn't mean he doesn't finish checks. It doesn't mean he is not a valuable hockey player all around. He is. We'll see with the contract. We'll see with his overall health and whether he can have that same physical edge he's had in the past. But don't discount that he is a good hockey player. He's got a great shot. He's got good speed. He understands positioning, where to go and what to do. He's not an elite two-way player, but he has enough understanding to be reliable, and he's been through it before. So when we're looking at Ferland, as much as he may not be that same physical presence we had all hoped when he signed the contract, they can still be a very effective hockey player there that does help your team's bottom line.
And it might come down to the issue of trust, right? You know, that look at Louis Erickson, the way he's been able to consistently get in games for the Canucks is because Travis Green can trust him in certain situations, whether it's on the penalty kill or closing out a lead late in the game. I think Michael Ferland falls into that category as well, as a player that the coaching staff feels they can trust, as a veteran who's been in big moments before, who, as you said, Sat, you know, has a lot of positive attributes to his game beyond just the, you know, the agitation and the physical nature of it. And, you know, you talk about things that could give him an edge over Jake Virtanen, the idea of that trust. Do you feel like you can throw Michael Ferland out for a defensive zone draw in the final 5 minutes of a third period in a close game? Yeah, I think the answer is probably yes. We've seen that in moments, in flashes with Jake Virtanen, but never really on a consistent basis. And, you know, going into the playoffs, the coaching staff needs to feel like they trust their players. They need to feel like they trust everyone in their lineup. Ideally, that could be the thing that gets Michael Ferland into the game against Minnesota.
Trust can be a big part of it. Also, just simple deployment and game plan. Because once you get into the playoffs, you're not as worried about rolling forward lines. Well, you don't want to be relying on just, you know, 7 or 8 or 9 forwards an entire game, but you are playing your top guys a lot more. That's kind of the way it works too. So based on how you want to deploy your top six and your top four D crew and how you're trying to make things work, right? It can influence the type of decisions they make. This isn't so much about coaches wanting to put together the 12 best players. Sometimes it's the 12 best players that fit what you're trying to accomplish. And when you have Toffoli and Besser both healthy and the top six looks as locked in as it does, and you want to rely on them a bit more, is there going to be a sense of being more risk averse? If you're being more risk averse, all of a sudden a guy like Erickson becomes a lot more palatable, and a little bit, you know, more palatable would be Michael Ferland as well. But if you're worried about risk, maybe Jake Virtanen doesn't quite get that same edge. But if, let's say, Travis feels like he can have a player that's a bit of a luxury item, he can play up and down the lineup and use strategically, then maybe Jake Virtanen makes sense because he has speed, he can shoot. You're not relying on him to, you know, be on the PK or be on the power play. So it comes down to what your game plan is as the coaching staff.
And I think that's a really good point, Sat. I think the maybe the bright spot for Jake Virtanen is his normal spot alongside Adam Gaudette. You know, it's the third line, and we always think about third line playing, you know, oh, it's a bottom six, they got to be responsible defensively. But that line in the regular season was very sheltered. They got a ton of offensive opportunities. They didn't go up against elite players for the other team. They were a very sheltered line, and you'd expect that probably to continue into the playoffs.
Well, the man himself is on the line, Canucks head coach Travis Green, joining us here on Canucks Central at noon on Sportsnet 650. Satyar Shah with Jamie Dodd. Travis, thanks for joining us, man. How you doing?
Hey, guys. Good. Doing well, thanks. How are you guys doing?
Well, you know, we actually have real sports things to talk about, and I'm sure you love us just dissecting your roster up and down, talking about who's going to get in, you know, trying to dissect your game plan and all your ideas.
I heard that.
I'm sure you love
I caught the tail end of all the assistant coaching you were doing there before I got on the line with you.
That's what we're here for. Anytime you need any advice on coaching, you know, the media has
like
all the answers, as you know.
I love it.
Now, Travis, you know, we caught some of the Zoom call you had, and one of the things you mentioned was how excited you're getting right now because you're only a few sleeps away from going to Edmonton. You see the intensity going up, and you talked about demanding more from guys as you get closer. What does that kind of look like right now as we're days away from you guys going to Edmonton?
I think it's happening naturally. I think our guys can feel it, that it's, you know, we're getting to the end of this camp here. And once you get to Edmonton, it's, you know, I think every group that goes there will get a lot more dialed in, a lot more excited. The intensity level will start to rise. I can just feel it internally within our coaching and, you know, maybe even the tone of voice that we're using as we're getting closer. So it's exciting. It's fun. It's why you play the game.
Travis, it's such a unique situation, you know, with the long pause and then the training camp in the summer. You know, I can imagine it in some situations it would be difficult for guys to immediately hit that intensity level. How have you assessed overall the level of play and the level of intensity from your guys at training camp so far?
I've been pretty happy with it. You know, I thought the first 3 days was physically hard on the players, which I thought they were excellent. I thought most of them came in very good shape. We've challenged our group just from an individual standpoint to come back better, come back in top shape. But also from a team standpoint, if you're not, you know, you could be in trouble as far as playing and not playing. So I think I've been happy with our group. I think they've slowly ramped it up. They understand certain things and what we expect, even though it's preseason and it's exhibition and what we're gearing up for. They've kind of bought in and our guys are in a good place, I think.
You're getting closer and closer to going into the bubble environment in Edmonton. And again, that's you know, an unprecedented situation. What kind of message have you given to your players about dealing with that environment? And I mean, you know, first of all, in terms of health and safety, obviously, but also just in terms of staying focused and staying mentally sharp while in that unique environment.
Yeah, we had that meeting early where we talked about, you know, two words that we wanted to use were adaptable and focused, and you nailed it. You've got to have adaptability right now. You got to stay focused, and then just embrace it. We want a group that loves to play hockey, loves to win, doesn't worry about things they can't control. And you know, when we get to Edmonton, it's not just going to be normal road trips. We'll talk again to our group tomorrow about it, and you know, there's not much more else to say about it.
We're in conversation with Canucks head coach Travis Green here on Canucks Central at noon on Sportsnet 650. And obviously, Travis, you've played on a number of teams. You've been part of teams, you know, your whole career. And players always want to win. But one of the things that I've kind of gathered, you know, talking to some guys and seeing, you know, how this team interacts and how serious they've been, that, you know, these guys do sense an opportunity here with this team. And some of your leaders have been very vocal about that and how serious they've taken all this. Have you been impressed by that leadership group that obviously includes, you know, Captain Bo Horvat and guys like JT Miller, that, you know, there's been that real push to take this super seriously and take advantage of the opportunity?
Yeah, I have been. I'm not surprised by it. I think, you know, this will be the third year that we've talked about pushing our team and getting our team to a spot where we can play these type of games. Internally, we have different type of meetings that maybe, you know, the outside doesn't hear. Even at the beginning of the season when, you know, our guys with social media now, they see everything and they see what the media writes a lot of times. And, you know, it was no secret that no one had us penciled to be in the playoffs. And, you know, internally, the conversations we have are a lot different than when people have from the outside about our group. And we, you know, I have a lot of belief in our group. We've talked about it from day one. We've talked about how we want to grow as a group, and there's going to be some bumps in the road. And at the end of the day, we're going to get better this past season, and we want to get to the point where we're at now. And, you know, I think our leaders also understand that our older guys in the team that, you know, this is a little bit different this year. You only get so many chances, and you know, this year might be one of those years where, you know, why not us?
Oh, and I think that's absolutely the right mindset to have, especially a team that has goaltending, has a defense that's emerging, especially with Quinn Hughes, and we all know the talent in the forward group. And one of the guys that we haven't seen a lot of this year because of the head injuries has been Michael Frölund. He's been going through concussions and the post syndrome and everything, and we weren't sure what to expect when training camp started. And Travis, I was at that last scrimmage. I was impressed by how well Frölund moved, how quickly he gets on the forecheck. He understands positioning well, and he's got a great shot. And even if he maybe isn't that same physical force he's been in the past, are you really intrigued by what he might offer you guys, even perhaps in game one against the Wild if he makes the roster?
I am. First of all, I'm happy that Michael Frölund is back for his own personal standpoint, and it's been a long year for him. You're happy for players when they're healthy, when they're feeling good about themselves. He went through a hard season, and here's a guy that signed. He's on a new team. The city was excited. We were excited, and it's been a trying year. So I'm really happy for him from a personal standpoint that he's back with the team. He looks good. He's getting better every day. And when he's on top of his game, Michael Frölund is a handful. He makes people know when he's on the ice. And I've talked to Furley, and if he's ready to play, and he is playing, he has no intentions of playing any different, and he might not be running over people right now in training camp, but that's not the way it's going to be when he plays, if he plays.
And Travis, you've been very upfront about the fact that you have many more than 12 forwards that could theoretically suit up for you against Minnesota, right? You go 13, 14, 15 deep at that position. And I'm curious, when it comes time to sit down and make the decision of who will be in the lineup for game one against Minnesota, how much do you weigh their performance and how they've looked in this training camp compared to, what they did earlier in their season and their track record as an NHL player?
A lot. I'm weighing a lot into what they look like in training camp. It's, for me, it's where are you at right now, not where were you at 6 months ago. 6 months ago has come and gone. 4 months ago has come and gone. And I need to worry about who's ready to play game one. I'm not going to be able to wait for players to be ready to play. And this is no surprise to any of our guys. They understand that. We've got 15 NHL forwards. Three of them aren't going to play. Three of them aren't going to be happy. And that's reality. And that's just the way it is. It's nice to have the options. And it's not going to be easy decisions because we take a lot into consideration. If there's one thing that we don't have is an abundance of penalty killers. And I'm keeping that in mind. And obviously matchups and the type of game it's going to be. There's lots that goes in. And obviously individual performance is the number one thing.
Well, and of course, you guys have to make a decision on how many players will be going to Edmonton too, of course. And that preseason game is coming up, and we found out today from reporter Chris Johnson saying that you guys could have 13 forwards, not just you, any team in that one preseason game. Having 13 forwards, you're going to have seven defensemen to make it easier to pair, perhaps make a decision in that game. How close do you think you're getting to kind of paring down your roster, and is there a lot of attention going to be put into tonight's scrimmage?
Yeah, I mean, I got a pretty good idea. I mean, it's no secret it's not that hard a decision. So obviously we're going to bring some different defensemen with us. We're getting close to having that in our mind made up. Tonight will obviously finalize it. And then whoever plays the first game, there's going to be some guys that aren't going to play in that game that, quite frankly, are guys that could play in the series. And that's just the way it is. I don't have a say in that. And we only got one game. I'm going to address the guys that have the closest chance of playing in the first game, unless there's an injury, the guys that are playing the exhibition game are probably the only guys that have a chance of playing in game one.
Which makes a lot of sense. And I know, Travis, we're up against the time with you as well. You have a lot going on here. You got a scrimmage coming up. We always appreciate your time. And if I don't get a chance to chat with you before, good luck in Edmonton. And we look forward to maybe an extended playoff run here.
Awesome, guys. Always nice to talk to you. Always nice to be on. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Travis.
That is Canucks head coach Travis Green joining us here on Canucks Central at noon. And, you know, it's what we've been talking about. We've been mentioning this a lot, you know, throughout the week on Sportsnet 650. We talked about this also with Brandon Batchelor during the intermission and post on the scrimmage that happened a couple of days ago. That game coming up against the Jets is essentially a dress rehearsal. So those are the guys that have a chance to play in game one. And, you know, you're maybe one guy, the 13 forward, is the only guy that has a chance. So if you were kind of waiting to see what happens in the scrimmage tonight, it kind of seems like Travis already has a pretty good idea who his 13 forwards are going to be against the Jets, unless guys get injured.
Yeah, it was interesting to hear him say, you know, those, the people who play against Winnipeg are the people who have a chance to play against Minnesota. So you can kind of close the book on whoever gets left out of the lineup against Winnipeg, as you said, barring injury. And, you know, lots of interesting takeaways from that interview, Sat. You asked him about Michael Ferland, and you could really hear the excitement from Travis Green at, you know, just the possibility of getting a player like Ferland back in the lineup and the kind of jump that could give to the team.
I'm going to get into the reading between the lines and tell you this is what Travis Green said or whatever, but him mentioning the penalty killers as well. And this goes back to something that we've talked about and I've been mentioning a lot. People got mad at me as well over the whole Louis Erickson thing. Why are you talking about Louis? Why is you even talking about him being an option? It's because he is an option. He kills penalties, and he's been good in a defensive role in the bottom six before, and he showed up to camp looking good, and he's performed just fine. He's very much in consideration because Ferland doesn't kill penalties. Zach McCune's not a penalty killer yet. Jake Virtanen's not a penalty killer. So he's mentioning penalty killing is going to go into our decision on the roster. It's pretty obvious he's talking about a guy like Louis Erickson, and that doesn't mean Louis's going to get in and play, but it just kind of goes to show that there are, these guys are all under full consideration still. And it comes back to, like Travis mentioned, the game plan stuff. So depending on what your game plan is for game one, how much risk you want to take, that's going to determine who you're going to have on Gaudette's wing. If you're willing to take more risk and want to get creative and have a luxury piece like Virtanen, he'll get in. But if you want to have a PKer, then, you know, you want to put Louis Erickson in to be safe. Now, if you want a physical presence, you want to have some speed, then Michael Ferland all of a sudden gives you that option. So you have three different players for three different options. And that's kind of where it goes. And as much as Zach McCune has been talked about, again, Jamie, I'm not sure he's quite in that same discussion as Ferland Erickson right now.
He seems to be a long shot, I think it's fair to say. Now, I will say on Louis Erickson, yeah, it was very interesting to hear Travis Green, you know, unprompted, bring up, hey, we're not overrun with penalty killers on this team, so we have to take that into consideration. It's hard for me to see Louis Erickson going up on that third line with Gaudette and Roussel. Like, I see Erickson more likely to draw in if there's an injury to Sutter or Mott on, or even Beagle, and then Sutter moves to center on the fourth line. Now, could you see something like, you know, Gaudette with Roussel and Sutter on the third line, and then Louis Erickson moves onto the fourth line? Maybe, but to me, the battle for the third line is really between Virtanen, Ferland, and McCune, and then maybe Louis is an option if something goes wrong on the fourth line. But it would be a surprise, even though he does kill penalties and he is defensively reliable, I would be very surprised to see Louis Erickson get that last winger spot on the third line.
It wouldn't surprise me at all. It would not surprise me at all if Louis finds a way to get in, right? Like, it doesn't. And I still think Jake has a chance to get in. No, Tambier texts in 650-650, says, Jake's not playing, LOL. Hey, that could happen. And, you know, as much as we talk about the scrimmage tonight, Travis didn't really put a lot of emphasis on it. He's like, yeah, we pretty much have a good idea. Like, at this point now, yeah, the scrimmage might matter a bit. Like, somebody's really, really bad. But it kind of seems like they have a plan in place now, as far as where they want to go with things in that game against the Jets. But so maybe who plays on what line in a scrimmage can tell you a little bit tonight.
And I absolutely think pay attention to the combination and who's playing with who. But I also thought it was interesting that, you know, Travis Green said, listen, we're not really concerned about how you were playing 6 months ago. We're concerned about how you've been playing these last 2 weeks, because there's no margin for error here. There's no time to wait for you to find your game while everyone else is already going, right? You've got to be ready to go right now. Again, you know, He's not talking about a specific player. He's not sending a message to Jake Virtanen there or anything like that. But if you do feel that Jake Virtanen is, you know, lagging behind getting his game up to speed, that doesn't necessarily bode well, because it suggests that, you know, the coaching staff is not going to have a lot of patience for guys who haven't found their legs yet.
No, and that's why I do think that last game that Virtanen played in the scrimmage, he was okay. Like, yeah, he wasn't one of the best players, but he skated well. He got a shot off. Like, there is enough there. So I think he's very much in the mix still to be one of the 13 forwards in that game against the Jets. So I still think he's in the mix very much on the McEwen one. That's the one I'm not quite sold on. You know what I mean? I'm just not quite sold, despite how good he's looked, that he's going to get put into that position, because it's kind of like the Ferland situation, right? Neither guy kills penalties, and Ferland, you can hear the coach get excited by him and talk about it. So I would say right now, Ferland has the edge over McEwen. So, right? That's why I don't quite put him in that, because that's the same. They're very similar players, those two guys, as far as the role they play. But Ferland has more experience and obviously the more established player that has had more success.
Yes, this texting comes in from Dell from Surrey. 650-650 is the text message inbox. Dell says, speaking of trust, Erickson is strong on the puck and a good defensive player. Then he goes on to say, playing release the Kraken when he steps on the ice is, however, out of the question. Yeah, no one's going to confuse Erickson with a Kraken, but you know, he's an octopus, maybe a squid of some sort. He does his job out there.
It's a conversation we've had, and I said this to James and Perry when I joined them yesterday. If Louis's making $1.5 million, nobody's complaining about him being the 13th forward, being a guy who could play, get in. Like, nobody worries about it. It's the contract that's absolutely terrible, and that's what creates all the conversation. And this text here, 650-650, amazing how Sutter is being completely left out of the conversation. Well, I think we're all assuming that Sutter is on the team.
Yes.
Sutter is going to be on that fourth line, most likely, unless an injury issue creeps up and he had to, you know, leave because he was unfit to play a couple times throughout training camp. This is predicated on if everybody is healthy. If Sutter is the least bit unhealthy, he won't play. But if he's healthy, I expect him to be on that fourth line with Beagle and Mott.
Well, and just for the depth at center, and again, coming back to what Travis Green brought up, again, you know, unprompted in our conversation, is the penalty killing. They're going, yeah. If Sutter's available, he is going to be in the lineup strictly for the work on the penalty kill.
Yeah, we got this question from Amar on Twitter. What about Roussel? Is he a lock? He looked like a shadow of himself during the regular season. True, but he's looked good in camp. He's skating well, and he's a guy that has an edge. The coach trusts him. He's done nothing through camp to put himself on the bubble. Like, he's essentially a lock here.
And he, you know, coming into training camp, maybe you could have questions about Antoine Roussel because of, you know, he didn't have the best regular season, but he's answered those questions in camp. No doubt about it. He'll be on the roster.
One comment from Shiloh to our text inbox: depends on how first plays against Winnipeg. We might see him against the Wild. And quickly, this is a question unsigned. What do you guys think the ceiling is for Ylevi and Lind from a depth chart standpoint?
From a depth, I mean, Cole Lind, you know, I'm not ready to, could he be a low end second line winger at some point in his career? Maybe, but I think you'll probably see him as that middle six guy. The best case scenario, I think, for Cole Lind is, yeah, middle six winger. You would hope that he develops his defensive game to the point where he can kill penalties, can move up in the lineup if needed, play that physical tough game and chip in offensively as well. That's what I see, or what I want to see from Cole Lind.
Yeah. And for Ylevi, the ceiling is, yeah, the ceiling would be second pair defenseman, more likely a third pairing defenseman, and the low end would be depth defenseman, AHL guy. So there's always the possibilities, and then there's a likelihood of each possibility. And I think, you know, if you're looking at realistic ceiling for Ylevi, it's probably a number four defenseman realistically right now. And, you know, hopefully he does better. Same thing with Cole Lind. But if we're being realistic, I think middle six forward for Lind and, you know, number four defenseman for Ylevi as ceilings would be a fair place to put him right now. And they still have time, though. I mean, they can have another good season, progress more, and who knows, maybe we up the ceiling for them.
Yeah, with Ole Ylevi, I know we're up against the clock here. We got to get out. But just one last thing on Ole Ylevi is, I think the range of outcomes for him might be bigger than any other young player in the Canucks organization, because he does still have the talent that made him a fifth overall draft pick. But there's so many question marks, and, you know, he could be a top four defenseman or he could never play in the NHL. That's really, everything is on the table for Ole Ylevi.
He is Jamie Dodd. I'm Satyar Shah. You've been listening to Canucks Central at noon. Jamie, always fantastic work. And you're going to be back on the air later tonight. Am I right in assuming that?
That you are correct. You are having the night off. Well-deserved, as always. So I'm going to step in and do a little intermission coverage during the Canucks scrimmage, a little post-game. And then I've been doing Sportsnet Tonight on Friday night. So we'll do an abbreviated Sportsnet Tonight after the Canucks scrimmage coverage as well.
I love it. Amazing stuff, Jamie. I look forward to listening to all your work a bit later on. Coming up next, it is Reach Deep. Randy Jandt, and who's on with him today? Is it Adam Forsythe still?
It is, yes.
Okay, very good. Adam Forsythe and Randeep Janda. I'm going to tune into these guys and see if they make fools out of themselves. You should too, right here on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.